Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Unemployable. Today we have a very, very interesting person with us. This person, actually, one of the questions we asked them, it's a property podcast before I mention anything. So not too much about business. This one's going to be in all about property. And it was funny because this person now owns over 300 properties himself. I haven't met anyone else that has owned that many properties. I thought I was doing okay. But when you start hearing someone owning 300 properties, and one of the questions we asked them off camera was, so how much income are you actually making off these properties? And he goes, off these properties. And he's like, to be honest with you, I really don't know. So when you don't know how much money you're making, that's a pretty cool position to be in. Nathan Birch, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. Carson, as usual, thank you so much for being on. It was actually you that reached out, I think, to Nathan originally, or came up with the idea to get Nathan on.
Yeah, and I was keen to get Nathan on. Been watching his stuff for a long time, and every man needs dogs a buyer's agent now. So it was I was just keen to get the OG on and unpack his story. So looking forward to it.
So good. And Shannon, thanks again.
Thanks for having me here, man.
Beard's looking better and better. For those of you guys that don't know who Shannon and Carson are, they're absolute legends. These guys have accumulated over $100 million of land deals over the last 4 to 5 years, over 170 lots of land. And 4 years ago, Carson was cleaning carpets, believe it or not, and Shannon was a machine operator. And we now have started Unemployable Property, helping people to do the exact same thing these guys have done. If you don't know who I am, my name's Eric. If it's your first time watching, I've got multiple businesses. We have multiple businesses in the e-com space, 8-figure and 9-figure businesses. I'm also heavily invested in property myself, and I can't wait to unpack this story because, Nathan, I remember you probably from 10, 12 years ago when I was learning about property.
Okay.
And I was, you know, did a couple courses, went to a few events, and then I heard about your company, which is called Be Invested. For those of you guys that want to have a look, it's literally the letter B, invested. You just put that in Google and there's plenty of information on Nathan and what he has done over the years. But what I really want to know, right, is it's hard enough buying one property. How the hell do you start buying and now you've accumulated over 300 properties? So let's start at the beginning, get a little bit of background on how you've actually done this.
Yeah.
And I have a fair few questions, and obviously I know the boys do as well, because there's a lot of viewers here going, I just want one. I just want to crack the market on buying one. And one thing that Nathan said off camera, he goes, I'm buying properties all the time. I've bought 11 this month. I actually just bought one today for $99,000. Like this is the thing. So he's... when people are listening to this, it's not like Nathan is going out there and buying multi-million dollar properties on all of these. I'm sure he has multi-million dollar properties, but he's still literally buying $99,000 properties. And you might say, where the hell can you find a property for $99,000? So let's start at the beginning then, and then really unpack that.
Go from there. Cool. Firstly, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah,
appreciate it. So when I first started, I was 13 years old. And I came from a family where, you know, everyone was working really hard and, you know, things were tough. And I don't have one of those sob stories that's like something bad happened to me. It's just, you know, just a hardworking family. And I saw, like, my parents were nearly 50 when they had me. And my brothers, when I was like 13, were buying a house to live in and stuff like that. And I got the magazines. Most kids at 13, 15, 16, they get magazines with pictures of girls or cartoons, or I don't know what they get. I got the house magazine. It was like,
I know which ones I bought.
Yeah.
It wasn't the ones with the houses on it. It was a cartoon.
So I'd get these magazines and I'd be like, cool. And rich people had property and I wanted to be rich. I didn't want to have to work. And at school, I'd keep getting D's and C's. And I still am like ADD, right? So I just diagnosed it myself, because if I had to say something's weird about me, it's probably that I'm like ADD or something.
Welcome to the party.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, getting grades at school that were substandard, and you know, the average wage back in 1998 was you know, 40 grand would be a good wage, 50 grand would have been a super wage back then. So I thought, if I had to get that, that's like crap to do that, right? And I don't want to have to work 40 years of my life to do that. You have to go to uni, whatever. So I was looking at these magazines and I thought if I could just get five properties that were owned outright, renting for $200 a week, there's $1,000 a week, there's $50,000 a year. That's cool. So at that point I was like drawing little notes, like imagine I had five of these, they're $100,000 a piece in Western Sydney, like little crappy houses burnt down, kicked in, whatever. And I thought, okay, cool. Imagine I could buy 10 by the age of 30. So at the age of 13, I made a goal. By the age of 30, I wanted to have 10 properties. And that enabled me to buy one a year between the age of 18 to 30 and have 2 years where I screw something up and I can't buy something and be accumulating. So that's what I started with. There was no podcast. There was no internet, right? They had magazines, not realestate.com, whatever. And I just went out and started doing that. And I thought it was impossible. And at the age of 18, I bought my first one. At the age of 21, I had like 6 or 7 properties at that point. At the age of 24 in 2009, I quit my job in the middle of the GFC. I had about $30,000 a year passive income, but interest rates had gone up a lot at that point as well. And then by just a matter of things happening, interest rates had fallen and the rents had gone up a little bit and I got to about $80,000 a year passive cash flow coming through. So I was like—
What year was that?
2009 in the GFC. So I was like, it was very healthy for me. Like I love recessions because stimulus packages and
yes,
stuff. Yeah. I didn't know anything about this back in the day. And then, I had a big ego at 25 and I started making YouTube videos and there was no such thing as YouTube back in the day. And I was making video cameras. I had a big JVC camera and I put it to a mount which would hook a GPS, like a sat nav. I'm showing my age with the sat nav. People, what's a sat nav?
Yeah, that's my age. How old are you? You're probably
turned 40. 40
yeah. Same age. Well, I'm 41, so yeah. we're all kind of
same age. Yeah, same age. We know what a sat nav is.
We know what a sat nav. I know what a Refidex is before this.
Yeah, an agro's card in connection.
Yeah. Correct.
I just thought that'd be a good goal. I pushed everything I could. I got there and then I started making these YouTube videos and then the media got behind me. I started going on the news. I had a mad ego. And then I wanted to just educate people back then. And I started educating people and people like, how do you buy a property for $7,000? I did a house that was firebombed in Kempsey, New South Wales for like $8,500. How do you buy that? Block of land, $2,000. The legal fees were more than the block of land cost me, right? And I was like, oh, I can get these things. Like, I'll pay you a fee for that. And that's how I started my buyer's agency journey from that side. And I started being invested 2009. And from that, I've built other businesses and that along the way. And the journey, like I don't do development. You guys were talking about develop beforehand. Yeah. I've got land holdings. I've got like an acre of land just around the corner in Southport that I pieced together, just little houses. I'm never going to develop it because I'm like, it's just...
Maybe you will. Let's do something together.
Maybe we could, right? Let's chat about it afterwards, right? But I've bought these lands, but I'm like, I'm not an active investor. I'm just a lazy investor. I want to collect something, get cash flow from it. The income serves itself if there's debt attached to it and it just puts money in your pocket each week and that's what's important. So.
Man, there's so much to unpack just in that. Now, how did you fund it? Like when you first started and... I know funding was a lot different back then than it is now, but we'll get into that and how you can overcome that now. But how did you get started? So when you're 13, you bought your first property. When you're 18, what did you buy? How much did it cost? Where did the money come from?
Yeah, sure.
It's happening. The Unemployable Crew are going to Dubai, and we want you there with us. On October 23rd and 24th of this year, we're going to be going to Dubai for a 2-day event. The first day is all about property. The second day is gonna be all about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. For the first few hours in the morning, we're gonna be doing an in-room event. We're gonna be talking to developers. We're gonna be talking to people from the Dubai government, as well as real estate agents. We're gonna be learning all about the real estate landscape in Dubai. After that, we're gonna be renting a coach bus where we're all gonna be going on the coach bus together, great networking, and we're gonna be going to all the different displays around Dubai and seeing the different infrastructure that they're building. We're then gonna be having dinner that night. Day two is all about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Adam is actually flying in to join us, and he's gonna be there with his trading partners, as well as friends of his that are gonna be talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. After that, we're gonna be having some lunch And then from there, we're gonna be going to a beach club and we're just gonna chill. It's gonna be relaxed. It's gonna be a great networking event. It's gonna be very unstructured. And this is where real wealth creation happens, guys. You need to be in these rooms. You gotta rub shoulders with different types of people. There's gonna be people from all over the world joining us there. If you wanna be there, register your details at www.unemployable.com.au/Dubai or click on the link on the top of the comments, register your details there, and hopefully you'll be on the bus and hanging out with us.
It's funny about funding back then to now. I see kids that are like, I've got a client that's like 18, he turned 18 last August. He's up to 4 properties on 50 grand a year income and he started with, 55 grand income and he started with 50K, right? And I'm like, shit, if I could go back in the DeLorean and get back to the 18-year-old version of myself, there's info I'd give myself today that's much better than back then. But how I started was between the age of 13 to 18, I was working, saving up money. I'd saved up about 40 grand. I bought a property in Mount Druitt, Western Sydney. It was a house. I had a very different belief system back then and I thought house was the only way to go up in value. So I bought this house, 248K, and I rented for about $200 a week. It was the cheapest thing I could find around an area of Sydney. And the market peaked in 2003. So after 2003 to 2008, the market crashed for a period of 7 or 8 years. People don't realize that happens sometimes. And I bought it very well priced back then. And I used a 10% deposit, maybe a 5 or a 10%. I can't remember. It's too long ago.
Yeah.
And then I bought that thing. And everyone's like, pay off debt. You don't want to have loans, all that sort of stuff. So I just kept trying to save money, pay out the debt. And then I got it down to like, from like 220K loan down to like 190 grand loan within a year. And then I was like, I want to buy another property. Right? So when I bought another one, I saved a deposit for that. I didn't understand how equity worked, didn't understand how banks worked. I just wanted to buy these. Oh, you called them houses back then.
So you were working at the time, making income and saving.
Yeah. So my first job, I had a family business,
an
aquarium, like goldfish and tropical fish and all that stuff. And then from that, my first job, I thought, I want to be rich. Rich people are real estate agents. I want to be a real estate agent. And I'm like, it's the worst job in the world. People give agents crap, right? I feel sorry for them. And it wasn't for me. So I worked in real estate. Then I worked in the media, selling advertising space, and I looked after newspapers and stuff like that. And that was my only career. I worked for about 7 years. I worked 2 full-time jobs. On the side of that, I worked in a pub and I did a pub job and that. I pushed to get 100 grand a year. I only ever earned 100 grand a year for 7 years before I could quit my job with 80 grand income.
See, I don't want people to overlook what you just said. You said you had 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And this is the reality sometimes of what you need to do, right? Yeah. And one of the questions I always ask people when they want to get into property, they want to get into business and you know, create wealth, I ask them a very simple question is, what are you willing to go without?
Yeah, true.
Because what people don't understand is the amount of time and effort that it takes, right? When you haven't came from, you know, a silver spoon, you know, and a trust fund, as an example, and you're trying to make ends meet, you work 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Right? People will see you 20 years later now and go, look at this guy with 300 properties and I've got more money than I can even count.
Yeah.
But the reality is when you first started, it was very, very humble beginnings and you had 2 full-time jobs.
I've always pushed myself like I'm broke, even to this day, right? I just push myself and push myself. And yeah, you know, there's been times where I've been an idiot and bought, you know, mad cars and stuff like that. There's been times where I've driven a $500 car and I've gone from a Bentley to a Mitsubishi Mirage to a, you know, whatever I had to drive on the day to push that next deal happening. So
I think what happens is you probably get to, I'd assume you get to a point where you've got that much money and property and equity that after a while, it's more of a game than it is the money part. And you kind of don't give a shit about those things. I feel like, you know, when you first start out, it's what does somebody do? They earn a bit of money and they go out and buy a brand new car, right? And they're still renting, and but they want everyone to see what they're driving. And I take my hat off to you because I was like that as well. Like I was literally driving around in a, you know, red Honda Civic, you know, manual for years, investing in property and in businesses. And I know these guys are still the same, you know, the wealth that these guys are generating, what they're creating is unbelievable. And it's not like they're driving around in their Lamborghinis, you know, they're driving around in 69 Chargers that break down. And there's a story to that. Not, but And that's one thing that, you know, I want the listeners to really think about, right? Is going, what do you like to move forward in life and you only have a certain amount of time, right? What are you willing to go without? And it might have to be that you got to get a second job or you have to go without something that you're paying for, or you have to start looking at, you know, creating syndicates and getting more money in the door. And I want to go over that with you as well. But how do you go from, you know, the first property at 18? Because it's very easy to just, I bought my first property at 18, and then by the time I was 21, I had 10. And then, you know, were you refinancing? Did you just keep working and then saving another 30 grand, putting a deposit? Were you using mortgage insurance? Were you using standard banks? I want to get granular and go,
yeah.
How did you actually do it? What banks did you actually use back then?
It's a fun story because I look at it today and the banks have not been my friends along the years. I hope they can be one day, right? but if it wasn't for banks, I wouldn't have 300 properties.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for banks stopping me, I'd be at 3,000 properties, right? So when I first started buying, it was all about the property. Then I realized the property is just a vehicle. Yeah, the business structure, like the strategy behind your investing and the why and how and all that is very important. And I always say to people, it's not about what I want as a property, it's what do I need for the bank to give me more money, right? How do you rock up to the bank for them to say this person's good, to give them, you know, the kitchen sink? So to start off with, it was buying the first one. I bought my first 5, 6, 7 properties were all houses on land, because that's what I thought. House and land units are no good, and I couldn't buy anything else after my 7th property, and
because of serviceability,
yeah. Mm. And I was trying to make sure everything wipes its own. I got the saying right; it needs to have its own heart, lungs, and respiratory system. Yeah, so it needs to be looking after itself without my intervention.
Because that's a big thing with you, right? One of your big things is positively cash flow property, not negatively geared. Because you can't own 300 negatively geared properties.
Good way to go broke, quick smart, right?
Yeah,
and with it. Looking at when I got to number 7, I couldn't buy anymore. And I found this little villa, and it was like a bank repo. Some poor bugger had paid 300 grand for it. I got it for 130 grand, and it's probably worth about 200 at the time. And I was like, oh, I'll give this one a shot. So I bought it because I could service for it. And then I went back because another one in the same complex came up a couple of months later. And I said, hey, can I get a loan for this? And the bank's like, yeah, we can give you a loan for it. I'm like, hang on a second. You told me I couldn't get a loan for a 200 grand property, but you gave me a loan for 130 and 140 grand property. That's 270K. You lied to me. And they're like, no, you've got 2 rents coming through now. And so instead of getting like 200 bucks a week rent, you're getting now 350 bucks a week. That's going to allow you to service for that. And I was like, hang on a second. It's not what I want. It's what the bank wants me to look like to keep them happy. So it was a big mindset shift at that. And I went and bought like random stuff in like country towns, little units. Like I bought a unit in Cairns for like $20,000 was the cheapest unit that I bought.
How did you know though? Like the big thing is, you know, doing due diligence and knowing areas. And how did you know to buy like these $20,000 unit or $130,000? And it's hard for people to comprehend today. For the people that, you know, are, you know, in their 20s, as an example, mid-20s that are going, yeah, all good for you, Nathan, you know, like 130 grand, you can't even buy a half decent car for 130, brand new car for 130 grand anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you got lucky. So like, how did you know the areas to buy in back then? Or did you just go, that's cheap, I'm buying it. That's
value.
Cheap, I'm buying.
I'm looking for value. So how much does the copper pipe cost in the wall? How much does it cost for human labor to put into that property? You can't rebuild it back for that price. And to answer that question, like this year, like we're talking before, like I've got motels, I've got shopping centers, I've got large acreages, all that. This year I wanted to get 100 properties this year. I was hoping to do 100 in a month, 1 month, but maybe we'll do 100 in a month. There'll be a fun story on that. But the stuff that I'm buying this year is not motels. It's not acreage that I can develop. It is little crappy properties that are sub 200 grand. So out of those properties that I bought one today, $99,000. I bought
So for $99,000.
A one-bedroom unit.
Whereabouts?
Victoria.
In Victoria,
yeah,
okay.
I bought 2 so far this year in Queensland, Yeah. I don't want to share all the secrets online.
No,
I'll share with you all offline. I'll show you the numbers just
below. Yeah.
So at 150 in Queensland, I've bought, I'd say out of, so it'd be 12 properties so far. I'd say eight of them are one or two bedroom units. Yeah. And they're under 150 grand would be the sort of average price.
Are you still using the old philosophy of below market value, upside for growth, and do they have to be neutral and positive now?
As long as it's neutral cash flow, And like I look at it now, it's like I haven't used a bank for ages. The last big four bank I used was about 12 years ago. I used some little lenders on the way. I've had to get creative at some points, and some points I buy them cash. And you know, it's just how do I fund myself through? And I could sit there and go, hey, cool, let cash build up. But cash is trash, right? It's losing in value every day. I want to have assets that are going to bring in cash flow and I can keep expanding my position.
And that's another thing I don't want people to look over, right?
Yeah. So
cash is trash.
100%.
Right? You're a big believer in
that. Have to tell you.
So am I. So is Jan and so is Carson. So I want to talk to the people right now, right, that are sitting there that have a house. And they're sitting on a house and they're sitting on money sitting in an offset account that is just sitting there in, you're sitting there in comfort, right? With this 100 grand, 200 grand, 300 grand, $1 million, whatever it is, sitting in an offset account, offsetting your 6 or 6.5% mortgage, right? What do you say to that?
It's a waste of capital. It's kind of funny because people go to work every day. Go, oh, I want to work hard. I want to get overtime. Don't want to see my kids, whatever, right? Earn some money, pay up my mortgage, right? And then they pay out their mortgage. They've got to get slugged from the government, 30%, whatever they're getting extorted from their cash. And they're putting their mortgage. They're going to save 5%, 6% interest. But inflation in real terms is much higher than that, right? And I'd rather have something that's getting inflated away than a currency that's getting devalued by the day.
And that's what people really need to understand there, right? Like, it's very easy to say that, but people need to realize that cash that is just sitting there is devaluing every day.
Yeah.
What you could get for a dollar a year ago, you can't get that same thing for a dollar today.
100%.
Right? Just like you just said, those $130,000 properties, they're not $130,000 no more. The one that he bought back in 2009 is an example. It's going to be worth a lot more than that today. But let me tell you, if you had that 20 grand sitting in the bank account offsetting your mortgage for the last, you know, 15, 16 years, whatever it's been, it's going to be a very, very different outcome.
Correct. And even like, here on the Gold Coast, I get sad when I come to the Gold Coast now. I used to come here like maybe 5-6 times a year. I used to buy 50 to 80 properties a month for myself and my clients for a period of about 7-8 years. I was picking up little units for 150 grand, 200 grand, 250K, houses for 350, 400 grand. And I look at it now and the cheapest entry point is $500,000 in the Gold Coast for a little one bedroom unit in Southport or whatever. The value to do that strategy isn't in the Gold Coast today. Like there's heaps of markets. They change constantly, right? But there are still out there. The deals are still there. It's just a matter of...
It's funny you say that because Carson went to an event a couple of weeks ago. And one thing that he said to me after he gave me the lowdown on how it went, and there was, you know, a very famous economist there and whatnot. And he's like, how did he say it? The Gold Coast is going to be a place for the... for the rich and wealthy, for the lifestyle, something along those lines?
Yeah, essentially just the way it's going, we're landlocked. You know, you've got Tweed to the south, you've got, you know, the koalas on the western side of the freeway. We can't develop out there and we're kind of stuck. So, you know, what lands here, they might be able to change the density and stuff a little bit, but it's going to be an area where we just got to, you know, admit that it's going to be for the wealthy, and places change. I mean, Byron Bay was the same. It went through its big boom and other areas go through. I was in Byron when it had its half price sale during the GFC.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's back to kind of crazy levels again. So, Gold Coast, like you say, it's unfortunate that it's at that level where another thing that we were listening to recently, it was when you look at the median wage of someone on the Gold Coast compared to the property, we're actually worse than Sydney because we earn so much less than Sydney.
Yeah.
So for me, it's not a great outlook.
But yeah. What happened for us to get there? I've got to go a bit off topic. Sorry, guys.
No, go.
What happened for us to get to a point where people can't afford that, right? Was it the property got any better
or is it the currency and cheap credit out there? And that's the big, like, that's the big thing, right? The currency that's sloshing around. Someone buys a property for 200, they sell it for 500. The person that's buying it for 500 goes to the bank and gets a loan for 500. The other person gets 300 grand cash. They go put it back in the bank, go buy a new ass or whatever. That whole system is designed to see this inflation trickle into.
The reality is, I agree with that. The reality is, for the people that are out there going, oh, I can't afford it, is probably bogus, right? What they can't afford is probably where they want to live. And this is why I always say, right, rent where you want to live and buy where you can afford, because you don't want to just sit there and go, I can't afford my house. Because I think we have this, I don't think, I know, we have this, you know, vision of, I just want to buy my property with my white picket fence. I want to paint my walls blue if I want. I want to paint them green if I want. I want to hang up my family photos and do whatever I want because it's my property, right? Whereas in rentals, people, you got to ask for approvals and all this, right? But rent where you want to live and buy where you can afford, because the reality is, a lot of people that, for instance, are on the Gold Coast are going to be like, I'm priced out of the market. Right. So there's going to be a point in time where they can't afford a $500,000 one bedroom unit, never mind an average $1 million house now.
Correct.
And for a lot of people, the reality is that is out of reach.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if they have two jobs.
Correct.
But you're giving these guys hope because you're just buying, you know, there's $99,000 property as an example.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like, let's say someone goes to buy a property for like $1.2 million, right? They have to go and get $1 million debt. 200 grand deposit. First, they have to come up 200 grand plus $1 million worth of debt strapped to their legs. That person's on the hook for having to go to work every day. If they choose not to go to work, the wife doesn't work, you know, you have to put the kids into daycare, whatever, you're trapped in that. For the same $1.2 million, you could buy six properties at 200 grand a piece and they're renting for $300-$400 a week, right? A 200 grand would rent for about $400 a week. So if you get six properties that rent for $400 a week, that's four sixes, that's 2,400 a week. That's like 140K a year worth of, about 130K worth of rental income. So you're not paying for that $1 million loan. You've got six tenants getting up every day, earning money. Yes, it's the same amount of debt, but it's a different asset classes spread across.
I guess it depends. The question is, which one do you want to be?
Correct.
Yeah. Right? Do you want to be the one that's collecting the 130 grand over here from six people, or do you want to be one of those six people, right, that are putting money back in your pocket? And this is a real lesson for people, because this is why we try and educate as much people around money, because people don't, it's amazing how smart people are and how you know, some people have some wealth and they've got great jobs, but they actually don't understand how money works.
Yeah.
And this is why we started Unemployable, to have, you know, people like you on here going, hey, this is what I've done, this is how I've done it. You mentioned something earlier when you were talking about this other guy, right? When I mentioned that, oh, it's all good, you know, it's easier for you to say back in 2009.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something, and then it was along the lines of, you know, I have something, you know, for people today. So what would that info be? Like, what would you tell people today? Like what that young guy is doing, right?
Yeah, so.
Again, you don't have to give away all the secrets, but we can get into the secrets after, and don't tell everyone all the secrets because I want to know those secrets off camera. I'm joking. But if you are Nathan Birch, because you said, I wish I had that information and I got into the DeLorean and I could go back and do that here.
Correct. Yeah.
What's some pieces of information that you can give some people now that are going, holy shit, there's actually opportunity, but I don't know anything in Victoria, or I don't know anything, you know, New South Wales.
I think the first thing is get a good relationship with money. Yeah. When you get a good relationship, people say, oh, money is good, but debt's bad. When you understand that money's not real, right? It's on the matrix, right? Is it the spoon that bends, or is it your mind that bends, right? The money was never real. It was printed in the circulation. So if you have a good relationship with the money, like you were just talking, then you can understand how it works and you can work out with a greater level of knowledge. So for me, when I first started, it was about working hard, saving deposits. If I was going back, I wouldn't have to work two jobs. But if I was going back, I'd still work two jobs, but I'd be smarter and wiser with the moves that I'd make. I didn't understand how equity worked,
I had no idea. I didn't know how funding worked. I had to learn along the way. That's why people today can go and buy, like when you pick up the newspaper, see 20-year-old, 20 properties, you know, 30 properties, that sort of stuff. They're doing something different. There were some stats that came out recently that said there's less than 20,000 people with six or more properties that they own. There's less than 2,500 that have 10 or more properties, and there's 172 people with 20 or more properties in the country. That's from ATO statistics. So now, what is different there? And it wasn't like, unless people say, oh, if you win the lotto or whatever, but it's like, let's look at a business plan, and what would that business plan look like? How's your accumulation? What does your finance look like? What are the hurdles that you're going to come across? And I always ask people, and I'll ask this, the question is for the viewers, answer the question. I'll give you the answer, because 99% of people will get it wrong. The question I ask people is, how would someone get to Perth, right? And people always say you fly, because they're instantly thinking you've got to fly there, right? No, there's people that live in Perth. They can walk. They don't need to fly anywhere, right? We don't live in an airport, right? We're here on the Gold Coast today, right? So for me to get from the Gold Coast, an aeroplane ain't going to land here. I'm going to catch an Uber. I'm going to have to catch a different vehicle at different times. So where is your destination that you're trying to head to, and what does that look like, and where are you starting at? Are you young and you've got no capital? Like a 20-year-old with 50 grand is better than a 60-year-old with 2 million bucks, because 20 years old, you can go back and utilize that. Yeah. But when you're 20, you may not have the capital, but you've got 40 years worth of working life to the bank. So how do you need to position yourself to the bank? What are the things you need to be attracting in those assets that you're collecting? Do you need it to be high cash flow? If you're heading into retirement, you might need more cash flow. But if you're starting out, you might need more equity. So it's identifying where you are. And most people, they just go, oh, we'll just hop in the car and see how we go. They're trying to get to Perth and end up at Cairns, right? They've driven for 5 days and then the wrong destination. And if I was starting out again, I'd go tell myself, understand how money works. I think I did okay with the strategy, but I'll probably add another zero on the end, right? If I had been wiser at the earlier days. So, I'll use the example of this kid he's 18.
Perfect.
He'd been watching me since like 15 years old or 14 years old, and he'd saved up a deposit, got 50, I can't remember if it's 50 grand he'd saved or 55 grand that he saved, but he's on 50 or 55, and he had 50, 55. And he came to me in October last year and said, hey, I want to buy my first property. So I bought him a property in Melbourne for $250,000. It was a bulk deal I bought. A week later, we revalued it for $489,000. Right? Pulled out 200 grand cash. He's 18. Right? In 3 months or whatever, right?
I don't know about these deals.
And I bought him two more deals, right? Or three more out of that batch. And those deals were like 250K roughly. One of them is 255, but we revalued that for 442,000. But his income doesn't service for that. So we've had to wait for him to get a pay rise from his boss just by a little bit to be able to get him to service, so he can go back, pull that equity from the big four bank, and then he can go to a second tier lender and go buy another two or three properties. Yeah. So this kid, by the time he's 19, he's going to have six properties.
But again, the strategy play in that, right? Like, it's not just going, okay, I'm just going to go and start buying property.
Correct.
I love what you mentioned about knowing what you need. So we underneath our caps, our unemployable caps, we have a thing called the ICE model: idea, capital, execution. And you need to know which one you are,
yeah,
right? So if you have an idea as an example, that could be a property. Today, my accountant texted me this morning and said, hey, I've been driving past by this block every day, and I know it's coming on the market. This is what I think. Let me know your thoughts. I flicked it to Carson as an example. He looked at it, he goes, actually, I might be able to work, but it depends on, you know, there's some recent sales. He sent me a report, which I'll then send to the accountant, because the accountant's like, let me know, right? Yeah. So he's got the idea,
yeah,
right? Now, I might have the capital, or Carson might have the capital, or Shannon might have the capital, and then someone's got to execute the deal.
Yeah.
That might be the accountant again, or it might be Shannon and Carson or myself. And it's the same thing what you just said, right? Like equity and cash flow. And this is what I always say is, you might be the person that, because I collaborate in everything I do. I love collaboration. And you might be the person that's going, I've got no job, but I've got $2 million sitting in the bank account.
Yeah.
And you might be the gun 22-year-old or 18-year-old that is starting to really understand this space.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about the age. You could be 30, you could be 40, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you got a good job,
yeah,
right? You're on PAYG, you're earning 200 grand a year. The banks love you, right? Anyone that's on PAYG, it's like, yeah, you're so far ahead of anyone like us that have multiple companies and trusts and all this, right? But again, if you can align those two people, right? One's got the capital.
Yeah.
One's got the serviceability from a cash flow perspective.
Right.
Yeah. And there's so much winning in that relationship that can happen.
Yeah.
And like what you just said, it's about strategy and knowing what you could do. And first thing I always say to people that want to look at property is sit down with a financial broker. Now, I know that you have off the back of the beauty of what Nathan's created here, not only is he a property investor, he now owns multiple businesses, right? Yeah. So obviously with you doing now over, believe it or not, 15,000 real estate transactions on his own properties and clients' properties, he now owns accountancy practices, law practice, financial firms. And one of the big things I always say to people is sit down with a mortgage broker, with a finance broker, and break down exactly what you make, what you spend, and see what you can actually service.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of people are scared to do that because you basically gotta, in a way, take your clothes off.
Yeah, lift right? up, lift up
you
the
literally
skirt.
Gotta lift up the skirt and say, all right, now I gotta show someone that I really don't know.
Yeah.
All my stuff that I spend my money on, all my Uber Eats, all my, you know, subscriptions and all the rubbish that we all spend money on, right? Yeah. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think, I think it's good advice. Do you think it's good advice?
I think it's important to always, like, I think a lot of people just, I don't know how to explain it, right? I don't know, I'm trying to articulate what I'm about to say.
Yeah,
but
take it down.
A lot of people will just go, I've been to the broker, so they said no, right? That's it, yeah? But why not? Like, you've got the kid that's like, but why, right? And just keep asking the same question, but till you get a different answer. So like, people go to the bank and they say, you can borrow $700,000. Okay, I can't buy a $1 million place to live in. Okay, we'll get something that's going to fit in that budget. How do you make that get you to that? So just like that vehicle, what does that vehicle do to get you there? Whenever someone, my investors say, like, it's hard to get 20 properties, right? It's not just as easy to do that. I reckon I'd pick up the phone to 150 of those 172 stats right now to say, hey, yeah, what's going on? But for each one of them, when they get stuck, they don't go, oh, okay, we're staffed, we can't do anything. It's like, okay, well, how much do I fail servicing by? What do I need to do to look more attractive to the bank? And asking those good questions and getting yourself finance ready, right? Close off the credit card, whether it's sell off the car, get rid of the car loan, you know, if you have to drop some cargo, you know.
What are you willing to go without? And this is the question, right? Because the reality is not everyone's going to get the answer they want.
Correct.
Because not everyone's sitting there on big pay packets, but you might... Yeah. There's so many people that I know right now, so many, I got 50 grand.
Yeah.
Right. They're on an average wage and they've saved 50 grand.
Yeah.
And they have no idea what to do with it. And I'm in a different playing field when I'm doing developments. I can't just take someone's 50 grand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the same with these guys.
Yeah.
So if you had 50 grand, 25 grand, 50 grand, and you have a job right now, what would you do?
So if I was to look at where's Perth, or where am I? I'm just going to make up some assumptions here.
Yep.
The assumption is I'm on a 80 grand, 100 grand income.
Yep.
Single person. If you've got a couple, it might be 150, something like that. Let's say 100 grand, 50K cash, and no crazy debt. Like you could have a credit card or a car loan or something, nothing too silly. What I'd look at is, okay, what is the end goal for what I'm trying to achieve? And I go, okay, is it 100 grand a year income that I want to replace? So I'd work it backwards and go, 100 grand a year is $2,000 per week. Yeah. $2,000 per week. If the average rent's $400, I'm going to need 5 properties owned outright cash. That'd be the first thing. So you're not going to get there with less than that. So that'd be the first thing. Then so how do you get 5 properties owned outright cash? So it'd be, okay, well, I can buy 5, work hard, pay out the debt,
but it's a very slow way to, like, you know, get slogged with taxes and all that. A better way would be you buy 10, let's say they're 200 grand a piece, and they go to 400 grand, you could sell off five and pay the other five. So then you've got five unencumbered properties. But I don't like selling properties. No one's ever called me up and said, hey, Birchie, I'm so happy I bought a property for 200, sold it for 400. People are like, wish I bought more, wish I didn't sell now, it's got the 600, whatever. So on that front, you know, I'd work, okay, how do I get 10 properties would be my first goal on what to do to get there. So 50K is the first step towards that. Yeah, you can put the 50K down, buy a property for 200, rent it out. It's not costing you anything. It's neutral cash flow. How do we get the second one? So then it'll be, okay, well, I can save another 50K, but it's going to take me another year, 2 years, 3 years, however long. By that time, everything's going to go up in value, whatnot. I could go back to this one property. If I bought it below market and it's worth 250 and I bought it for 200, I wish I had a whiteboard here to draw it all on. People would follow by this, but I can rattle numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But if you had 200 grand, you need to put down a 20% deposit. That'd be 40 grand as a deposit, and 10 grand for stamp duty and closing costs. That'd mean you've got a $160,000 loan from day one at 6% interest on 160K. You're looking at about 8-9 grand a year worth of interest plus other costs. So the rent would cover it nicely. If you went back and revalued it for 250K, got an 80% loan at 250K, it would be $200,000. So the new loan of 200 minus the old loan of 160, you've got 40 grand equity there. That 40 grand would go towards your property number two.
And this is the system, right?
Correct.
Like this is a strategy.
Correct.
But it takes time, right? Not all properties people are buying. And I know you do a lot of bulk deals through your buyer's agency, but not all properties people are buying them for 250 and getting revalued at 480, you know, the next week or the next year.
Correct.
And these are the strategies that people need to think about. And it takes time. This is the thing, what you said earlier about the 20-year-old or the 25-year-old, what they have is time. And Adam says this over and over again, like, they're rich in minutes.
They don't realize it.
All right. Yeah. They're rich in minutes. It's the same thing. You're like, I'm 41, you're 40, you know, the boys are a little bit younger than us. And I think to myself, like, wow, if I knew what I knew today and what I would do, again, it would be so different. And even someone, and it's humbling coming from someone like you, that's not, like, I could maybe own 3,000 properties instead of, you know, 300 properties. You mentioned a few times already, I think I know what the answer is going to be, but under market. And I guess there's, you got macro markets, and you've got micro markets. And when you're in a macro market, like something like the Gulf Coast as an example, as a whole, this is where you live, right? Yeah. You live on the Gulf Coast, you live within a 5 kilometer radius and work within a 5 kilometer radius of your house. And this is me in my mindset, like, where do I invest? On the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
Because I know the Gulf Coast and I'm comfortable with the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
But how do you find under market deals? Because I'm kind of like, on the Gulf Coast, I'm like, how do you find an under market deal without having to scour realestate.com for, you know, hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And you might say, you know, there might not be a lot of under market deals on the Gulf Coast. I'm not sure, but like, how do you find undervalue deals, under market value?
On the Gold Coast today,
yeah.
I feel like there's still a level of price exploration happening in the Gold Coast, which wasn't here before. Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the properties haven't been at this high before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fear that I see in the Gold Coast and a lot of things, any market that goes up,
yeah,
when a market crashes and it hits a bottom, you see it hit a floor. It could be there for quite a while. Gold Coast has been through that. Sydney's been through it. Every single state has been through it. Yeah. I used to come in and buy everything when it was like so cheap, right? And everything's been smashed. But now it's like something from 200 goes to 300-400 grand. Well, how do you know it's going to be worth 500 grand, right? Because it's only speculation that gets to that point. But once it kind of sits at a certain point, then you can see, okay, this house here is on the market for 500 and this one here sold for 600 6 months ago. There's a value there. Is the market going backwards? No, it's not. Okay, cool. That's, yeah, you've got to base it on recent sales and other properties that are currently on the market, which is where I'd see where the value is. But the price exploration is that it's at an all-time high. So it's like, is that something that I want to go and play in while everyone's, it's like going, oh yeah, we need to buy a bottle of water, right?
let's go to the Easter show and they're $10. I'm not going to buy water until I get to the Easter show, right? If you order a bottle of water from the servo for $2 on the way in, it'll be like, cool, right? It's just being wise with where you're investing at that time. So I was buying in the Gold Coast when it was no good and it's taken off. Everyone's made lots of money, which is great. Then I was like, I don't want to buy so much here. So I started buying in areas like Townsville, Perth. I was buying units for 150 grand 2 years ago in the Townsville area. You can't buy there for under 350,000 today for the same thing. So they've doubled.
But how did you know, to buy those for 150? How did you know they were good value? Is there just like a calculation that you use? Is it obviously, I know you have a full team now that probably.
I just do all the research.
Oh, do you?
Well, I do all the deals myself. Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. Like hundreds of deals I do.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah, yeah. With that market, I'm a contrarian investor, so I want to buy things like, we'll talk about Bitcoin before and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. People are like, oh, Bitcoin, let's go and buy it. It's 180 grand in Aussie, right? And I was like, you should have bought it when it was like smashed last time.
Should have brought it in the beginning of April. One of the boys we have on the pod, Mark, I seen him put it on his Instagram today. And he's like, guys, I was talking about this. Look at my video back from April 11th. Because he took a bit of cash from his dad.
Yeah.
His dad had a little bit of money. He's like, dad, give me the cash. Because he's a bit of a trader now.
Yeah.
And you look at it April 11th when it was coming down, right? Trump and all this stuff, what's happening. Yeah. And you look at it today, it's almost 29% up.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's hard to buy when things are burning down. Like Melbourne right now, I'm assuming there would be some amazing deals in Melbourne right now.
So I went into, yes, there is. Yes, to answer that question. I'll get to Melbourne now.
Yeah.
Right. But so Townsville,
yeah.
I was buying below rebuild cost. The affordability of the people, right? The wages that the average people are earning that can afford those houses. If you've got a property that's gone up from 200 to 800,000, what's the chance that it's going to go to 1.6? What's the income of the people when you think about the bank and the servicing of the bank? What's the income of those people going to be able to service up to? If they can't service for more than $1 million, then there's sort of like an area where it can't go over that level.
Yeah.
If you're looking at something for 150, 200, 300, 400 grand, there's good upside to that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that can afford to buy it or rent it.
Correct. Yeah. And it's below rebuild cost. And migration to those locations, yeah. And what's happening migration wise, because if you had to be a competitor or coming into the market, the cost of building is going to be so much higher, everything's going to get dragged up naturally. Gladstone, like I was buying units in Gladstone for 60 grand, $80,000, right? And they were selling for 500 grand, 400 grand 10 years ago, right?
I can't even pour the slab for 60 grand.
Correct, right?
Like,
exactly, right? Perth, I was buying units in Perth for 120 grand in the CBD. Like just a one bedroom unit now, like 500 grand. I was buying little houses in the rough areas of Perth for 200 grand 4 or 5 years ago, 7 years ago, but everyone spat on it. They're like, it's not a good market. Dan Andrews, I'm not a fan of Melbourne, right? I like people from Melbourne. It's nice. It was. There's a lot of graffiti there now and stuff, but that market in Corona, I feel like there was, yeah, mass exodus.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been discouraged and thrown their rental properties, whatnot. But once again, they're bringing more migrants into Melbourne than anywhere else in this country. Yeah, we're bringing in, I saw a stat the other day, for the first quarter of 2025, there was 180,000 people migrated to the country. Where are they going? Yeah, that's the size of Hobart.
Yeah.
Size of, what's the population of the Gold Coast? Like half the Gold Coast population, right?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, 180,000. Yeah, it's a lot of people. Of course, they're going somewhere, and the majority of them are going to the capital cities.
Great, yeah. And I can buy property. I feel like Melbourne is the Gold Coast of, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years ago. It won't always be there. Do I buy there because I like it? I'm not a fan of it, right? But the values, I'm buying there cheaper than what I did a few years ago in, you know, Cancel or wherever. So
yeah, and it's a mindset, really, right? Like buying when things are low.
Yeah,
because the media, the people you talk to, it's crashing. The market's crashing. It's never gonna come back. Like, I remember in 2012, GFC was still happening. Yeah. You know, and I'm from Canada originally, and I'm like, had a bit of spare cash at the time, and I'm like, I'm gonna buy a property in the US. And this is literally when we had real estate agencies on the Gold Coast, on Gold Coast Highway, and all they were selling was U.S. real estate. Because back then, there was two things that happened. The U.S. real estate tanked,
yeah,
and the Aussie dollar was at par, yeah, with the U.S. dollar,
correct,
believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I ended up buying a property in Sarasota, in Florida.
Okay.
And people were like, you're crazy. You are absolutely crazy. And same type of thing, you know, we paid for a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, condo,
yep,
beautiful on the water, $115,000, you know, Aussie back then. I still have it, okay, you know, 13 years. I try not to sell as well.
Yeah.
You know, 13 years later, still rented out, you know, I've, yeah, literally been there and seen it twice.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Right, it's hard going against the grain,
yeah,
because basically you're basically like Braveheart on the horse with your blue face painted, and you're like, let's go, and you look back and no one's there, yeah, it's just you, because, yeah, everyone else is like, you're crazy. It's like Will Ferrell, right? We're streaking and look, everyone's coming and no one's there. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So how do you overcome that mindset? Because I've been the same thing, like, oh, Melbourne, oh man, it's, yeah, you know.
It was just Melbourne today. It could be anywhere. There's
no, Melbourne today, but again, it could be any market. But how, yeah, do you, like, obviously you're in a different position, right? But like, if you're, because the reality is there's a lot of people, and most people really have a scarcity mindset. That's the way we've been raised, right? You've been raised in a very humble environment, which was work, work, work.
Yeah.
Money's hard to come by. Money doesn't grow on trees, right? Bad people make money.
Yeah.
And majority of people think that way.
Yeah.
What are some things that you would do now if you were in that headspace to overcome that? Because I think, like, watch the Unemployable podcast, right? Yeah. Surround yourself with people that are doing better things. Like right now, the whole time I'm just like, make sure you get Nathan's mobile number after this pod, yeah, so you guys can connect.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I need to be doing some other things. Because,
yeah,
again, I'm scarce.
Yeah.
I'm like, Gold Coast. Why? Because I know the Gold Coast. Oh, I don't know other markets. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
No, you know, stick to what you know.
Yeah.
And you're just coming here going, I've got Townsville, I've got Perth, I've got this, I've got that.
Yeah.
How would you overcome that mindset right now if you were that person again?
I had to overcome it at the start. I still do to this day. And I look at it, if you do what everyone has done, you'll get what they got. I don't like to use like stolen analogies that people always, you know, throw around, right? But I got asked once on a podcast, what do you have to say? The average investor wouldn't do this. What would you have to say to do that? I'm like, I don't want to be average. I remember at the time I was like, I don't want to be average, right? Why would I do that for, right? So, but for me, like, their opinions and thoughts don't pay my bills, right? And when I first started, I remember I bought 3 or 4 properties, and I had like a leak in the ground. Like, it was like, I had to fix a leak. I was like, broke 19-year-old kid or whatever. I was like, digging the trench, trying to get the pipe out for someone to fix it. And I went to see someone and they go, why do you have these crappy properties in Western Sydney, right? You should sell them and buy a studio unit, right? And I was like, trying to explain, like, oh, I need the cash flow from the rents and all this sort of stuff. And the person's like, no, they're crap. They're never going to do anything, right? And I thought, well, they've gone up and doubled. Your house has doubled. I asked the question, like, do you think this property at 200 grand will never go up? And they go, no, right? I was like, how much is your house worth? 400 grand. Okay. So you're telling me that 5 years ago was your house worth 400 grand? And they go, no, it was worth 200 grand. It's gone up in value. I'm like, okay, so 5 years, 10 years ago, was your house the same as the house in Mount Druitt? And they go, no, right? And their opinions, like, didn't add up. And I had my strategy. I had a business plan, which was to buy these properties to keep the bank happy and to make cash flow. And I tried running their figures and their thought process, which was based purely on fear. I'm like, that doesn't stack up at all. I'm on the right track. Thanks for reconfirming that. So if you have clarity on where it is that you need to go to, the world will stand aside for, you know, to let you get there, right? So cutting out that noise, if someone hasn't got what I want to achieve, then I'm like, okay, well, where are you coming with your opinion? And I have some great people around me. One of my best mates, who's my accountant, right? I talk to him about stuff and he's an accountant, right? So by nature, they're very, you know, conservative. And I'll say, oh, I'm going to do this, this, this. And he's like, oh, Nathan, you know, it's like, you know, I love it because he tells me what he wouldn't be doing. And I'm like, cool. I'm seeing his perspective, and then I come back to him and I'm like, hey, I just did that. And he's like, oh shit, virtue, right? Like, I told you, like, look at the risk. I'm like, thanks for sharing me where you're coming from. But I factored in the risk element that you were looking at into my strategy to make sure that I'm protected on that front. So, you know, is there a validation? Is there a reason why someone's telling you it? Or is it just your mates down at the pub that are like, oh, don't do that, that's crap, whatever. Because there's so much noise out there. If you do what they've done, you'll become who they are. And it can be property. It could be, you know, let's say you've got a missus issue, right? Someone's got a missus issue and you've got two mates. One is in a successful marriage and one's divorced for the fifth time, right? And you're like, oh, I just had a fight with the missus. This one will be like, oh, you know, sometimes you got to look back at yourself. It might be you that's caused the problem, whatever, right? The other one's like, oh, women, you know, leave her, right? Let's go get drunk. And it's like, well, if I take his advice, I'll end up there. If I take his advice, maybe it's a different approach.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I'm always have been a big believer of building a great network and making sure that you realize and think about who you're spending your time with. Because we all have friends, right? And we all have acquaintances, and we know the ones that bring us value, and you know we have ones that bring us down. And sometimes you got to give energy to both for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
But I think with time being so scarce, right?
Yeah.
Because of how busy we all are and social media and the rest of it, the reality is time is more scarce now than it's ever been. And I think it's because there's a lot of wasted time, especially because there's so much distraction at the moment. So you have to be very careful who you're surrounding yourself with. Like, I love like talking to, you know, Shannon and Carson, every time we're talking about things, we're talking about awesome things.
Yeah.
Right. And again, I hope if they find themselves in a difficult situation personally, or they can ring me and say, hey man, can I get some advice? And usually, funny enough, I'm usually the guy that gets the phone call out of all my mates and their issues. I'm the guy that gets the call for whatever reason. But I'm happy to help, right? And in business and in investing, like you being on here, all I want to do is talk to you more, right? And go, okay, where are my blind spots? What am I not seeing here? You know, if you're in my situation and you have XXXX, what would you do?
Yeah.
Right? And I'm sure that you'd sit there and go, actually, you know what? Check this out or check that out. And it's the relationship, right?
Yeah.
And once you get close to people, you're going to get the phone call, right? I'm sure that you have a syndicate or you have a close group of people that when you have a bulk deal, you've got your go-tos.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Shannon and Carson will have the same thing. When they have a big land development and they need the investment, right? If they're looking for a JV partner, they've got their go-tos.
Yeah.
And what you want to do is be involved in groups, right? That you have go-tos in a positive way.
Exactly.
So I'm a massive believer in that as well.
With the 300 properties, surely you're not taking the phone calls for the broken dishwasher and all the rest. You've got a team that takes care of that. Have you ever had the thought, stuff it, I'm just going to sell it, buy a couple of big commercial properties, and then it's a lot easier? Or have you just got someone that manages that and you've said, hey, don't ring me if there's an invoice, if there's something that needs to be fixed for under $2,000? How do you manage that? Like, and how do you manage your property managers? I mean, I know you've got your own property management business. Do you have any tips for people that have got a portfolio? Because I see a lot of investors, they have one bad tenant that kicks in the door and they throw the towel in, this is all too hard, I'm not doing it, because I just don't have that emotional intelligence to kind of navigate the situation. And there's so many times we've picked up properties just because they've had, you know, a bad tenant. So what advice can you give to someone going through that at the moment, and what do you do?
Yeah, cool. Good questions here. A few things. One thing you said there about people pack it in, right? I remember once I had a stressful day, right? And I had like 20 calls, one after other. This is business-wise, right? Nothing to do with property, just random. And I was in the car, I was with someone, older guy, he's like just chatting to him. And I was like, fuck, I just wish I could be left alone, right? And I was like, I hate these calls today, right? It was just stressful. And he goes, oh, you could get a bit, you could do something different. You don't have to worry about it. You could go get a job working for the government, right? I was like, actually, these problems sound okay, right? So it's a part of the job of being an investor, right? You want to be a business person, you're going to have bad days. As an investor, treat it like a business. And that
I guess, takes me into treating it like a business, have the processes, the systems, procedures to be able to do so. All my properties have the same color paint. So if you ever ask me, hey, what paint? It's just the one color paint. Now,
what color is it?
Lexicon half today. Yeah. You can paint the walls and the ceiling the same color. And then you've got the 90 mil cove corners and the shadow that it gives. It looks like two different colors. And it's like, you know where to go pick it up, right?
Yeah.
The tiles, same tiles, right? Wall tiles, same tile. Everything's the same. Doesn't matter if it's the motels or the houses. As for all the bills, I don't want to pay them, right? And you think about 300 properties.
You'd be, every day, there's multiple toilets and like plumbing invoices being paid every day.
All different stuff. But yeah, even just like council rates, right? Yeah. Once a quarter, every quarter, council rates, water rates, strata bill, insurance bills, well, something like that.
You're paying 1,200 rates bills a year.
Per quarter. You got, oh yeah.
A year, yeah.
Like, plus like, it'll be like 5,000, right? Imagine sitting there typing BPAY and stuff like that, right? The first thing is I get all the real estate agents to pay those bills.
Yeah.
Very important. Secondly, you don't want to have an email address, which is your normal email address, which would be affiliated with all your property rental stuff. So I set up a property rental inbox. So if I want someone else to check it, I can just say to one of my staff, hey, add this to your desktop. And if it's something urgent, then yeah, check it out. Property management's the most stressful part of being a property investor.
I used to own a property management and holiday, luxury holiday accommodation business with a good friend of mine. And yeah. Property management, man.
Yeah.
Difficult business.
Very difficult, yeah. And it's a thankless job. I always say it's a thankless job. I set up a property management business probably about 13 years ago now. And it is a thankless job. It's a thankless business. And I always joke to people that it was a charity because 90% of real estate agents out there are pro-tenant because the tenants complain the most and they just go, oh, we'll just keep the tenant happy by fulfilling it. But they're not looking after the investor. So that's where I was like, hey, I need to look after the investor. So it's just a part of my ecosystem. But have processes, systems, procedures in place. I see people that want to pay every council rate. I see people that want to go out and do the renovations themselves, right? It's like, I'm not a tradie, right? I did it in the first renos. I had to do sweat equity and I'm not a tradie still, right? Never was a tradie, but I can do stuff. I can tile if I need to, whatever, but I've got a better value than that. I remember once I took 2 weeks annual leave in my job. I was about 23 years old. I was painting a house and of reality, I'll probably spend about $3,000 of my annual leave to paint this house. I've got like paint all over me, cups all over me, stuff like that. I'm thinking, shit, I should be focusing on getting my next deal where I'm going to make $50,000 on and then try to paint a wall, which I've just lost my own income because my opportunity cost of time that I could have paid someone to do the same thing. So
I think we all fall in that trap, right? Like it's like Carson going doing his own sales or Shannon hopping into the excavator and going, I'm going to save $20,000 or $30,000 here, but the next deal they're going to make $3 million, you know, like,
yeah.
And I do it as well. Like we're building a luxury house at the moment. It's taking a lot of time, right? But I'm very, very detail orientated, right? So I'm there double. I'm picking stuff up all the time. But I'm like in the back of my mind, I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this, you know, like, it's hard to overcome that, to be honest with you, you know, because it's I've been raised, I don't know about you guys, but like property management in old school European or Portuguese background, you know, predominantly Portuguese city at the time. And if you had a property management business, you would have gone broke because everyone manages their own properties. Why am I going to pay this guy 7%? You know, like I'll go and fix it up. I will go and do the, like you did, right?
Yeah.
And it's again, it's all back to that scarcity mindset, right? Going, I'm going to save $100 here and give away $10,000 over here. It's one of the hardest things to over. Man. I still deal with it today myself.
Yeah. I on that note, like I had a little chuckle in my head as you're saying that, right? About I'll go manage it myself. It's literally every time I get more managers, I need to have more staff. It's like, it's not like a profitable business and real estate agents have the rent roll so they can get listings out of it and all that sort of stuff. So that's why they have it in their business. I'd say 80, 90, even to 95% of the properties that I buy are under rented a good $50 to $80 per week. If you've got 10 properties, $50 a week, there's $500 a week. There's, you know, it's massive. The property manager is just wanting to get through their job with the least amount of complaints that, that comes their way. I had this client I caught up with recently, and I feel bad, right? I'm laughing, but it's like, it's really messed up, right? So Carrara here on the Gold Coast, right? I bought the property from him about 2016. And we're having a chat, like, how's everything going? And I said, hey, what's your rents? Because I go through, review the portfolio when I catch up with my clients. I was like, what are the rents? And he goes, oh yeah, this one here. He goes, I've got the best tenant in here. Never have any complaints, right? He goes, I save myself $20 a week for not paying the agency fee. I was like, okay, what rent you got? And I saw it was like $350 back in the day. And then he goes, oh, I've got it, it's rented for $350 a week, right? And I was like, are you fucking kidding me, right? Three bedroom townhouse in Carrara, probably worth $700, right? $750 a week. And he goes, he didn't realize, right? And he was trying to save on paying an agency fee. And it's like, you didn't know. Mm. And how's he going to have that conversation? It's like,
it's a hard spot to be in.
Yeah. I guess that same thing can apply to any aspect. If you try to cut a corner, like, could I make a website? I don't know how, but I'm sure I could find a way to make one. But is it going to be as good as the one that I have?
And it'll take you 120 hours to do it.
Exactly.
I'll still be half shit.
Yeah, you're not a professional in that field. You're probably not proficient at it, so you won't do it quickly or manage it well, like you said.
Correct.
I just want to ask, what were some of your hardest lessons? Like, you got a massive portfolio, like, really good success, and you've touched on a few points. And you're even going before about when people are buying one property, equity, save up the next deposit, move into the next one, and bits and pieces. What are your lessons been along the way? Have you gone back to the one bank and then regretted those moves and gone to brokering, or what's, or properties that you've purchased?
Yeah, it's a good one. I've never lost money on a property, which is good. I buy it below market, so I'm making money from day one. They don't all go up at the same time. Probably my biggest pain points has been every time I've gone to grow, there's always a new gatekeeper there, right? And it's there to, like, kick in the guts and fight you to get through that next hurdle, and it's because you haven't done it beforehand. So, like, I started with those little cheapies in Western Sydney. I started buying stuff in Cairns and Tamworth and Gold Coast, everywhere. And then I started buying acreages, right? And then I got stuck with finance in 2016, and APRA changed all the lending. And then I couldn't get loans, so I had to sell a couple of properties. And then I couldn't settle $10 million worth of property at the time, so I wasn't going to lose a dollar of deposit. So I sold a couple of properties, and then I was like, shit, I'm not going to pay the mortgage. I'll just keep my cash flow and redirect it into settling these things cash, right? So then it choked me up at that period of time from a lending perspective. And then I look back and I'm like, these things are more negative cash flow, but I've got all this land amassed. So I diverted from my core strategy of buying the little cheapies that worked for me very, very well. And I was like, I have to push it way to the other side. And I started buying high cash flowing stuff. So I bought all the motels and some large blocks of units and stuff like that. So
there's a bit of a switch towards commercial at that point.
Correct. Yeah. And Carson asked before about commercial, said, you said something about commercial. Like, do I ever think, should I sell some stuff and go to commercial? No. Yeah. I've bought commercial. I own, one of my favorite properties is a commercial property. It's an old Video Easy that I rent, that was vacant for 11 years. I bought it for $460,000 waterfront unit in New South shop, like, on land. I rented it for 20 years for $100,000 a year to ASX 200 company. So it's a pretty good return. I had it vacant for 2 or 3 years. How many times do you drive down the Gold Coast Highway and see a vacant shop, right? And it's vacant for 5 years. It's only valuable if it's got a tenant. And if that tenant goes bust, then we're in a time where, you know, business has some issues. Macca's profits are dropping at the moment. It's like, imagine if something went wrong with Macca's, right? So there becomes risk everywhere. But I'm not a big fan of commercial. I'd rather have blocks of units, because you've got these people that will be able to pay you the $300 a week, $500 a week, no matter what. But diverting to, you know, blocks of units, like, that's out of my, like, I've got like 400 staff now. And it's like, shit, I didn't sign up for this. I don't know how to manage so many staff. I don't know the headaches of, you know, HR and all that. But you have to deal with that to keep growing. And it's like, well, that's a part of the journey that I've signed up to do. And, you know, yeah, each level, I'd say, in growth has always had a new set of challenges. And it's easy. I think a lot of people see a challenge and shy away from it, but it's like, you need to go through it. It's like checkpoint on an old Sega game, right? You have to slide through, and then you get to the next
batch of life. So
the common theme that I see here, though, is you have a strategy.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said it from the beginning, you don't develop and you don't do commercial, and you've stuck to your lane, and you've been so consistent and dedicated in doing that. And I think that will be a big reason, I think, as well, you know, multiple reasons, but for the level of success that you've had, because you haven't kind of veered off and going, I'm buying all these cheapies and I'm developing and I'm taking on commercial. How do you stay in that lane? Because I'm, you know, very shiny object, like we all are, right? Like these guys came to originally, how we even met was like, hey, we have, you know, great success in our land developing business, but we actually think we want to like set up a business.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, they obviously realize going like, actually, you know what? I don't need to set up a business because I have an amazing business right here.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? How do you stay in your lane? Because right now there's so many options for people out there, and there's so much distraction, like even just on Unemployable in the podcast, we talk about so many different topics, right?
Yeah.
Giving people so many different options just in property. Never mind in business, never mind. And one of my other questions is, you know, what else are you investing in?
Yeah.
And that won't be financial advice, but like there's so many other, right, investment vehicles.
Yeah.
How do you stay in that lane without going, yeah, let me just toss here and, you know, get that ego back in play and go and build this block of units, or, you know.
Yeah. I guess a couple of angles of it. One is choose your challenges, right? You got to focus. Like if you go off doing something else, it's going to take energy from, you talked about energy beforehand, that energy that needs to be directed on that, stick to that. There's successful pizza shops out there, right? I'm sure, right? I'm not even going in any fast food, right? Macca's sell a cheeseburger and a Big Mac, and it's the same bloody patty that they have, sort of sausage and egg McMuffin. I haven't been to Macca's for years, right? The same patty goes into all the burgers, right? Different sauce, different pickles, different whatever. They don't have a pizza operating machine out the back to sell pizza to take Domino's or Pizza Hut's market share, because that's not their game. They're focused on how can they get that crappy burger to QuickSmart that you're going to keep wanting to come back and get it handed, thrown out the window to you, right? And as an investor, my properties may not be sexy or flash. I do have some very nice properties, right? I've got waterfront property, a little different stuff nowadays, but the core 90% of them aren't, you know, the excited, you know, glossy looking things, right? But that's the strategy. It's, yeah, so just sticking on that.
Thank you.
How do you work on a strategy? So if you're a person right now that's like, I want to get into property, I want to get into some type of investment, and you had a blank white piece of paper, because that's what most people have, right? It's just a blank white piece of paper going,
yeah,
where do I start?
Yeah.
What would you recommend them doing? How would you guide them right now to say, all right, for the next hour, we're going to be sitting here, and these are the things that I want you to do. You mentioned one before about having a plan.
Yeah.
How would you break that down if you were doing it today?
I think the obsession over it as well, right? An hour ain't going to cut it, right? It's like, who do you want to be? Right? I just turned 40 last week, and I'm like thinking, who do I want to be at 50, right? And how do I need to show up to be that person at 50, yeah? Because the relationship with the money, the relationship with the asset, is easy to obtain something, but equally easy to lose it as well. So I think it's important to work out not just what the end looks like, what is that whole grand picture, and who do you need to become as well to be able to obtain that and to be able to manage that? Because I've seen people build wealth and lose it. I've seen people build a portfolio and then they lose it. So if I had a blank piece of paper, I always think, okay, that's cool. That's the short plan, but what's the bigger plan? What's the risk that are around it? Do like a SWOT analysis.
Yeah.
If I was to identify, you know, a word for it, a SWOT analysis would be the best thing to go, okay, what are the risks? How can I minimize the risk? And you've got all the elements to it. And what sort of factors can you put in and measures can you put in to protect yourself? And, you know, you guys are doing development and I'm not doing development, right? And doesn't mean that you can't make money out of development. There could be someone making money out of shares, but it's just not my game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
I think working out what is that vehicle that's important and what's the vehicle that's going to get you there the best way. It could be my way, it could be your way, it could be the next person's way. Yeah.
Another thing I mentioned is you know, work backwards, like where you are now, like where do you want to be financially? Like a lot of people think that it's, you know, 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, 100 million, right?
Yeah.
And I always just say, like, work back, right? Yeah. And go, where are you now? Yeah. Why aren't you happy? What else do you want?
Yeah.
And work out what that's going to cost and then work backwards. Like you said, okay, I've got a job that I want to replace $100,000 of income in net cash flow. What do I need to do that? Okay, and work backwards. That means you said I can own 5 at X amount, or the better strategy that you said was own 10.
Yeah.
Right. And working backwards of what you actually want, because some people think they want more money, but it might be a bit more time. It might be they want to see their kids, because like you said earlier, majority of people don't see their kids because they're working all day. And one of the biggest scams is you go out there and you work all day to then take that money and give it to someone else to look after your kid called daycare.
Yeah.
You know, like it's mind-boggling, and we've all kind of, you know, fallen in this trap. So for me, a big recommendation that I would do is, yeah, again, work backwards from a financial standpoint as well, because sometimes it's not as much as you think,
yeah,
what you need to get to where that next level where you want to be.
I think a lot of people, like, I remember when I was younger, people would be like, Birchie, if I was you, I'd be out in Vegas partying, you know, like imagine the chicks you get, right? Whatever, right? And for me, I don't even drink nowadays, right? I haven't had a drink for years. Same. But I'm like, that's what you would do, but you're not me and I'm not you, right? And I know people that would be like, I'm going to travel. It's like, well, if travel's your goal, how much is it going to cost you? So what does that lifestyle look like?
Yeah.
They said, you want a Lambo? Cool. Lambo's cheap, right? Like you can go make some money and make a Lambo. But you want sustainable cash. I think everyone should have, this is a question I'd actually encourage everyone to look at. If you didn't have to go to money for work, what would you be doing with your life? If you were unemployable, right?
Yeah.
What would it take to get you there, right? And that could be, like, I need 100 grand, I need 200 grand. Whatever that figure is, that's what you need to focus every bit of your waking energy into making happen. What do you need to do to get there? And who do you need to become to get there? To get from 0 to 5 to 5 to 10 properties to get to 10, that's one thing. But then once you get to 10, are you going to stop at 10? Or are you going to go to 20? The person that you start off with buying the first property, your mindset will change. The person you are will change. Sometimes it's good for people. Sometimes it's not good for people. But yeah.
The buyer's agency space has changed a lot in the last kind of 10, 15 years. Obviously in America, it's huge. And in Australia, it's growing. Like it seems like every man, his dog is a buyer's agent now. Even agents are leaving to become buyer's agents. And
yeah.
So for the average mum, dad that's time poor out there and they're like, you know, stuff, I don't want to do this myself, I want a professional. What questions should they be asking to a buyer's agent? Are you just looking for them to have the runs on the board that for what you said previously, work your way backwards, work out what you want? Have they got those results? Or, you know, what other things should potential investors be looking for when they're engaging a buyer's agent?
Yeah, good question. You said at the start, the OG buyer's agent, right? 16 years ago, there was no such thing. I remember saying, oh, I'm a buyer's agent. People were like, what's that? I'm like, oh, you pay me a fee, I find you a property. And they're like, what, I have to pay you a fee to find your property, right? There were conversations that were had back then. Today, you know, my team talked to new investors coming on board, and it's like, oh, what makes you different than the other buyer's agent? So there's a whole industry there that wasn't there 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
The only thing you need to say, what makes you different? I own 300 properties. Ask how many of the other buyer's agencies, how many properties they own.
Correct, right? Correct, right? But once again, right, like if we look at the property is a car, right? And if you had a car here, let's call it, I don't know, a Lambo, whatever, right? That car would have the engineer, have the auto electrician, the panel beater, and have the race car driver, the car salesperson, all different people that would be around it.
And in your case, the same paint and the same tires.
Correct, yeah. Same tires, like a Kia, right? But reality of it is that there's all different people and different expertises out there, right? And I see the buyer's agency industry has come big way in the last 3 to 5 years. There's a lot of people that don't own anything, right? They're just like, oh, I'm a buyer's agent. They're on a couple of week course. There's no
infrastructure. I think, and what I'm excited for in the next decade is to see, you know, some, you know, governance and not regulation per se, but like a bit of governance, a bit of structure. I think a lot of the buyer's agents need hand-holding out there. There's, you know, sort of help that they need. But I look at the buyer's agents. I just buy investment properties, right? So I want a high growth, good investment grade stock. That's what I specialize in. If someone wants a house to look at, to live in, sorry, and they want to go look at 10 houses, I can see the nice views in the back of the, behind us here, you know, like a unit with a view over the ocean, I'm not your guy, right? So there's people that specialize in buying a family home and whatnot. If I'm looking at purely what I do and how to get someone that you can trust, I'd be asking questions around how many people, like once you work, at least you shouldn't speak to anyone until you know what you're looking for, yeah? Once you've found out, okay, I want to get to 10 properties, I want to get to 20 properties, and it's not just pulling a figure for no reason. It's like, what do I need to get to my goal? They're going to ask people, well, how many properties do you have? How many people do you have that have got, if it's two, how many have two properties? How many people have 10 properties, right? How many people have you helped me in a position like mine? Can you tell me the story of how they got from where I am to there, because I don't know how to get there? And you want to see their response and their feedback as to what they're saying, because they're like, oh, well, I've got one guy that had 400 grand a year income and he got to five properties. It's like, well, I'm on 100 grand. I want to hear a story like mine. If they can't help you, they can't. You're going to be the first one.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Yeah.
It's something you said earlier, which I think is key for people, you know, that are listening, is understand what the banks want, because whether you're playing the development game or whether you're going to do an investment strategy. Yeah. And another thing you said was asking stupid questions over and over. I think that's what me and Shannon's success to everybody that we work with is way smarter than us in every discipline, but just asking questions. Why can't I do that? Asking someone else and asking multiple town planners or multiple mortgage brokers, because you start to ask better questions as well as you go. So I think that's a huge thing, actually sitting down with a mortgage broker and understanding, ideally someone that's built, you know, larger portfolios, and not just because there's accountants and mortgage brokers that, you know, they're not all the same, right?
Correct. So many of them try and sell you their story, right? And if you don't know what you don't know, then you're going to go on, you know, oh, my accountant said to do this because that's bad, that they're trying to take you down a path that is offline. Like we're talking beforehand about, you know, if there's noise, how do you avoid that noise? That noise can come from your professional team as well. So you need to make sure everybody in your professional circuit's on the same page. You can't go, if you've got an accountant that's like, oh yeah, I'll get you to pay no tax and get all your money refunded, that's cool, you save some tax. But you go to the bank next week and say, hey, can I get a loan? They're like, you can't even get a credit card because you're on the food line.
Yeah. It's definitely asking the right questions to the right people, because sometimes not all your advisors are the right people.
Correct.
You know, like this is like when you look at all the financial planners are going to hate me, but you know, a lot of financial planners that are out there aren't financially free themselves. They're not, you know, financially great themselves, yet they're telling you how to manage their money.
Yeah.
Right. Accountants, you know, I've got amazing accountants and have for many, many years, but I know people that get advice from their accountants and their accountants have nothing.
Yeah.
So you got to be very, very careful. You want to make sure that whoever you're talking to is, you know, at a level that you want to get to at least, right? Yeah. To break through those glass ceilings to get to that next level. Very, very important.
Correct. Correct.
The motels you spoke about, that kind of gets my juices flowing. You know, I want to unpack that a little bit. Can you kind of show us that journey and what made you? Is it purely cash flow? You just saw the opportunity there. Obviously, finance is a different beast in that world as well. Can you kind of show us that journey quickly? And then I want to, you know, ask you about your other investment, you know, strategies as well.
Yeah, cool. I think you'll like some of the motel stuff actually. My advice of motels, I'm not a big fan, right? Yeah, so that's the wash up, right? I've done very well. Again? 30. Right? So with the motels, how I came to be with that, I bought two motels probably like a decade ago, 15 years ago, and I just rented them out as like
House of Commission tenants. They weren't rented as motels. They caused a bit of trouble, but they worked okay. Like they're done all right. Then I saw in about 2020, I was buying properties in Gladstone for 50 grand, 60 grand for people. And then I went to go buy, I wasn't in the position to buy, I wanted to buy like 20 of them. And I was like, maybe a year passed and I was like, I'll go buy 20 of them. And they're all gone to 120 grand. I was like, shit, these things have doubled, right? I'm not buying them now, right? They've all doubled. So I went on and looked at the commercial properties and I saw that the commercial properties were totally junk, right? Stuff that was like $1 million was selling for 100 grand, all that. So I bought a couple of commercial properties there. And then I saw the motels. And like, I can get a motel for 30 grand a key, 40 grand a key, 50 grand a key, right? These things haven't gone back up yet, right? So I thought, I'm going to buy a couple. And I thought, if I buy a few, I don't want to run them like I did before. I want to run them like a motel. If you've got a local, like an owner-operator, I can do it better. I've got corporate, I've got, you know, my whole team, HR, accounts, marketing, all that sort of stuff. We can do it up a little bit. So I went and bought a few. And then I went out to one of the motels. And I was like, this thing's like 100, like just on high level. I bought it. It was like 30 room motel for like 750 grand, this one was. And then I was like, shit, I want to buy like 100 of these things, right? I did a YouTube video. So I'm going to try and buy 20 a year for the next 5 years. And then I put it live. And my team were like, what the fuck, Nathan? Why are you saying you're going to do like 100? Slow down, whatever. I was like, oh, I'll find a way. So I went out and I was like, I want to buy 100 of these things. And I bought about 30 of them. And then I really screwed myself up, right? Because there's all the staffing. I bought pubs that have beer, theft of beer, poker machine licensing, like just the headache of stuff, right? But these things have got up so great, right? Some of them are very great and some of them aren't as great. But at the time, just thinking about this, right, it was Corona. No one could travel, right? But these ones were like in little regional areas where A, you're buying it on like an acre of land, in a prime location, development could be very strong for them. And then you've got these people that are desperate. Their business has turned to crap. They might have bought it when they're 60, but now they're 80 and they're like achy, whatever. They need to get out. And it's like, well, there's no one else there to buy it, right? So I went in there, I bought like maybe 15, 20 of them cash. And then the balance of them, I was like, I don't know, just threw like a convertible lease. So I did convertible leases. I did like a balloon payment, like a car lease, right? Where you pay like, it's $1 million. They want their price, I'll give you your price. But they're going to pay you over the next 5 years. But the lease is like $1 million and the purchase is 100 grand, right? Mm-hmm. So then I can claim that from a tax perspective, yeah? Because I'm buying something different. And then I did some vendor finance to them because no one else, who else is going to buy you stuff, right? So that was what I saw there. And the market, they all doubled and tripled and like, scrap this, I'll, you know, get back to my original game, right? So that's the motel game in a nutshell, yeah.
And yeah, I know I've heard you speak previously about silver and Bitcoin and the like. You want to let us know where your thoughts are with all that at the moment?
Yeah. So I got it was actually on the Gold Coast. I had a mate that's in the crypto and he had Bitcoin at $500 and he was telling me he needed 10 grand. And he said he had this thing, he was talking to a chick about having a credit card that he could spend money on. And I said, man, that sounds like barter card. That's like, sounds pretty dodgy, right? You need 10 grand, sell that shit, right? Like, got 10 grand, you'll be fine. And he goes, oh, okay. He sold it. And about 6 months later, he posted, he wrote, oh, these Bitcoin that I had went from, $600, $500 to $800. And I was like, it was maybe $200 to $500. It was like, it's cheap. And I was like, what is this stuff? And I asked him, hey, where do you buy it, right? I just want to look at it. So I bought like a couple of Bitcoin, like $500, $700, something like that. And I bought $500 a day of it because that's all I could put into the thing. And it was like about $1,000 at the time. And then it doubled within like a day or two. And I was like, what is this thing I just bought? And I started looking at it. I'm like, hang on a second. I knew money was screwed. And I'm like, this thing's what I thought would be cool to make something like this. And I didn't even know what Bitcoin was when I bought it. It was like, I was thinking of like, imagine you had, I was into silver since I was like 15 years old. I was buying coins and stuff like that. And then I was thinking, imagine if you had a room which you could transact on, right? Where you had like an IOU on that room and have like weighted shelves, silver and gold, video cameras, people could verify it, that it's real. And I saw Bitcoin. I was like, that's mad, right? So I started buying, I started mining and all that. But like anything, like I'll just jump in of it, like, yeah, let's buy 100 of these things, right? And I started mining crypto, got raided from the cops from a drug squad because they thought that, like, you know, I was growing weed or something, right? I had a meth lab in the house. And yeah, I realized when I was buying crypto, you have $1 million, it turns to $2 million on the weekend, it comes back down to $1 million, you lose $1 million. And it's cool, but it makes you lazy. And I focus on it. And at a point when I was buying the motels, I needed cash. So I was like, I sold some of my stuff. And I mine crypto now. I have some crypto, but I don't look at it like it used to because, yeah, I just, it's takes like, focus, yeah.
The just hold it for the long term now?
Correct, yeah. And cash flow comes through from the mining and the sun. And
yeah, that's the same thing with me, is just buy and hold strategy and just ride the wave, you know? Yeah. It's funny because in property, like stocks and Bitcoin and these types of things, it's instant. You're seeing it every day. So it's great for your anxiety levels, right? Like you're going, yes. And the next thing, oh, property's not like that, right? Property's, it's, you know, when there's a downturn, it takes time, right? You don't see it on a chart going bing, 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 bing. So it definitely keeps you on your toes. That's the way I look at it, you know?
The amount of Ethereum and Bitcoin I lost from buying crappy ICOs thinking they're going to go up and down. And then like, I'm just going to hold onto that thing. It just buries into the ground. It's like, there you go, there's another one, right? It's like, I just, it's not my core thing. So I focus on predominantly my property, but business also.
Yeah.
Other things that I invest in is businesses that I do as well. Like as far as, I own a Chinese restaurant, random fun facts. It came from the part of a motel, right? Or like, what the hell, right? I saw dim sims and stuff, right? That's come away, right? But my core business is like, I've been growing the real estate business and you know, I've got some goals through there. I want to build a bank one day with my goal, one of my big goals before I die. And you know, building, I feel like, I don't know how, but I see, you know, with the infrastructure that I've built throughout my businesses that I can get there, and I'm very focused on that as well. So yeah.
Honestly, I love what you're doing. It's funny because like I said at the beginning of the pod, I remember you from back in the day and back when you were doing those videos.
Yeah.
And it was just a young dude going, I've bought this. And I remember seeing you in front of these three-story walk-ups, you know, 80 grand, 90 grand and this type of thing. And, you know, probably 15 years later, here we are on the podcast. Yeah, full circle, which is pretty cool. Before we find out how people could get in contact with you in your team, I want to ask one more little sneaky question here.
Yeah, sure.
Where are you seeing opportunity right now? And are there any forgotten suburbs, you know, that smart investors should be looking at, in your opinion? And this is not financial advice.
Yeah.
And you don't have to give away everything, but maybe just a little, little piece of chocolate.
Yeah, that's cool. So every year, right? Like there's always an opportunity because not everything's like, there's a macro and the micro level. And if we look at, you know, the market, you hop onto the news and it says, oh, you know, this area's gone up, some RP data, core logic stats have come through, you know, everything's gone up. But there's areas that don't all just go up like today, hey, we're going to put the prices up here. The Gold Coast had doubled, but Townsville hadn't. Townsville went up, but Mackay hadn't, right? And I look at all those areas, they've all doubled and tripled and quadrupled in the last few years. And the percentage of growth has gone up much further than, you know, people would, you know, normally see. Today, there's a few of those areas left. I even see areas like in Sydney where you can still buy a two-bedroom unit, right, for 350 grand in a good blue-chip location.
While we low build cost. Replacement value.
Yeah. And some of these areas which have got like little old three-story walk-ups, you might have 15 in a block, but the land value is worth 5 million. And the land value is basically what you're paying for the thing. So you're getting the unit for free, you're getting cash flow for free. A developer will come along and pay 800 grand or
that's a good strategy.
Yeah. So you can still buy in capital cities. Melbourne, just the place got decimated. There's good and bad areas down there, different types of assets that are good and different ones that are bad down there. Be very careful. Even places like Adelaide has gone crazy. Darwin, that's one place, right? Like the Darwin market. Yeah, it's already,
the sort of markets have already taken off, right? Mm-hmm. Like they've had a massive load of growth, but there's still, I think if I fast go back 22 years as a property investor, I've been able to buy still every year and buy those little cheapies. I think the day's coming where it's getting much harder, where like 300's the new 200.
Yeah.
And yeah, just keep looking, keep pushing, and build a strategy that's going to work. Yeah.
Do you keep an eye on other areas that impact the market? Like Perth and WA, that's had a massive push recently because it was cheaper and everyone dived in over there.
Yeah.
But do you keep an eye on like coal prices, iron ore? Obviously got political changes and land tax changes down in Victoria. Do you watch all those things as well?
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. I've got so much infrastructure that's invested in like the mining and coal, and everyone says coal's rubbish, right? But you know, what are they doing at the back end and who's collecting from that, right? Yeah. People have got tens of billions of dollars worth of investment in infrastructure when they're saying it's going nowhere. Literally, there's locations where there's towns that will have to get gobbled up. They'll take the actual town out in 20 years' time because there's no more coking coal that's there, and it's needed to make stainless steel. So I look at all those variable factors, and you know, I see people when mining booms have occurred in my time anyway, they just go stupid, right? Like, oh, let's go in the back of Blackwater and buy a place for 800 grand and it rents for, yeah. I'm there when it's 100 grand. I'm there when it's 80 grand, not when it's 600 grand. I want to buy it on its worst sort of day. But all those factors are very, very important because that gives me confidence in going, hey, I can pull that trigger when everyone else is on the shoulder going, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. But it's based on fundamentals. And yeah.
And you're just looking at, to know you're buying that at the low, you're just looking at the previous sales over the last couple of years to keep an eye on that as well.
Previous sales, infrastructure, mining companies. Funny thing is, out of the motels, I house mining companies, their staff. And out of those staff, you know, I see the different projects and the different things that they do in their cycles of their journey and their life cycle. So I can start getting on the ground information that you wouldn't normally see. It all helps out. Yeah.
Now, for people to find out what units you're buying and what houses you're buying, and if they want to follow that that cycle,
yeah,
how do they get a hold of you guys at Be Invested?
I've got to have a
word. You're right.
To get in contact with us, contact us 1-300-367-925.
Yep.
Email the team at admin@beinvested.com.au.
Yeah, and that's admin@B, the letter B, invested, INVESTED.com.au.
That's it, yeah. Or just go onto YouTube, type at Nathan Birch, look at Be Invested and watch some videos and see what I'm up to. And yeah,
awesome. Oh man, like we could be here for another hour and a half easy. Plenty of questions. I've got 3 pages of questions that got printed off. I've asked one off this page. The rest of it just comes organically, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just want to say thank you very much. We know you're based in New South Wales and you're doing some business up here and have an office up here. So busy guy. And yeah, thanks for coming on the pod. Really appreciate it. I think that's going to add so much value to a lot of the viewers that we have.
Thank you.
Shannon, Carson, as usual, A-team. Thanks for being here. Thanks for, thinking of Nathan to come on the pod. I think this is going to be an absolute cracker. And thanks for your attention, guys. Again, this is what we're trying to do. Show up again every week, bring on amazing guests. Like this guy's literally owns 300 properties, 30 motels, a Chinese restaurant. Just appreciate you.
Thank you.
Your time and your efforts for being here. And guys, please like, subscribe, comment, let us know what you loved about this podcast, what we could do better, and what other guests that you want us to bring on. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see you on the next one.
Hey there, I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.